Hello, everyone. Welcome back to In the Dry Dock. I am your Captain Wade, and as always, I am joined by my executive officer and co-host and good friend, Will.
Welcome aboard.
All right. I assume everything has gone well, Will. Are you looking forward to a particular class coming up this semester?
Yeah, I actually get to take an industrial design course this time around, so that's going to be pretty interesting.
Kind of makes me really excited for my practical theology class. That's where we actually get to act like pastors,
Oh,
even though
interesting.
we're not technically certified yet. So I'm really excited about that.
Cool.
Anyway, for our fourth venture into the dry dock, we have a little bit of research and speculation for you all. We can't all be telling history stories this whole time. Now, as you can probably guess, we both love big guns and the ships that carry them. As you heard us expound on both battleships and then aircraft carriers later on, but especially battleships last episode, tons of fun there. So, Will, what's your favorite naval rifle that was used by a battleship at any point?
Well, two of the most famous ones are the British BL 15-inch gun, and that was used on all kinds of ships. And then I also really have a soft spot in my heart, as probably any U.S. Navy history buff does, for the Mark 7 16-inch 50 caliber gun firing the super heavy shell, as seen on the Iowas.
Yes. And personally, mine was, as you mentioned, the 15-inch BL Mark I British naval rifles. These were exclusively mounted, if I remember correctly, they were exclusively mounted in twin turrets. Like I mentioned in the last episode, these guns were not flashy until you accounted for accuracy. Mated to superior fire control radar, these guns could drop accurate shells at extreme ranges of 20 miles or 32 kilometers if you're across the pond. They were also quite ubiquitous. Like Will said, they were used on tons of ships, but three different classes of battleships, including the famous HMS Warspite, which had that long hit. I believe it was against an Italian cruiser, if I remember correctly.
It was the Italian battleship Giulio Cesare, I think, is the ship that she hit.
Ah, and also four different types of battle cruisers, including the famous/infamous HMS Hood. These guns were everywhere in the Royal Navy, and I don't blame them. They were not flashy. They were not considered modern by any terms. In fact, the 16-inch 50 caliber naval rifles that Will was talking about, technically and in terms of capability, were probably better. And
Well,
obviously, they
and
could.
it's important to remember that the BL Mark I was really considered the super weapon of World War I. When it came out in World War I, it was miles beyond anything that was available at the time, and it was considered a huge gamble. And it really speaks to how effective this thing was that it was still used on frontline ships in World War II when there were ships being built that were like two generations more advanced than the ones using the Mark 5 or the Mark I 15-inch.
Listen to all you kiddies out there. Don't let old make you think that it's useless. Always,
Definitely.
always make a use for something. All right. But anyway, this episode isn't about naval rifles, or at least not exclusively. It is about the possible reintroduction of big guns to navies everywhere in the form of rail guns. Now, what is a rail gun, you ask? Well, that's a very good question. Before Will gives us the in-depth rundown, because he's our resident engineer, I will go over some basics. A rail gun is a weapon designed to fire a projectile using nothing more than electricity. No gunpowder or explosives are involved at all, unless, of course, you want to up the destruction factor of the projectile. And in theory, these weapons could hit from over 200 miles away, which would put them on par with some missile technologies that are currently used today aboard ships. Will, being the engineering training of the two of us, how does a railgun work exactly, or at least in theory?
So, without going into too much detail, essentially the way that railguns work is they use electromagnets along two long rails to accelerate a shell forward. It's actually very similar to the maglev principle that's used on high-speed trains, and it's essentially using that same concept but to fire a projectile. What's interesting about this technology is that it doesn't have exclusively military applications. One of the most interesting aspects of railguns, I think, are some of their potential peaceful uses as what are called mass drivers in space. And they can be used to send equipment various places. There's talk of using them to send packages of processed resources from asteroid mining and other future technologies like that. So it's not only a weapon, but it's definitely something that could increase the firing power of some of our modern day ships. As Wade mentioned, one of the best advantages of a railgun is it has longer range and it uses almost entirely kinetic power. And so, as we talked about in our last episode, some famous warships have been destroyed because they've been hit in their powder magazines. And if you were firing a railgun, you don't need any gunpowder for that. And so you wouldn't have to carry highly dangerous, unstable materials like that on your ship.
Correct. And even more interesting, another not necessarily directly destructive, but the Gerald R. Ford class carriers, as far as I am aware, are using a kind of railgun technology to launch aircraft. Is that true?
That's correct. So that's called the EMALS system, or I think electromagnetically assisted launch system. And that's replacing the steam powered catapults that was used on the previous Nimitz class ship. As far as we know, the Chinese are developing a similar system for their third aircraft carrier, which is currently under construction.
It'll be interesting to see how things pan out in the Pacific as the Chinese ramp up their naval power, don't you think, Will?
Definitely. Yeah, we're watching that very carefully.
Yeah, because to be honest, like we're going to get to, I'm going to mention this in my ship of the week, but even after what we mentioned with the downgrading of the US Navy after the Second World War, the US Navy is still the largest surface capable fleet on the earth at this point. It is still the most capable. It is still the force that can deploy the most ships. But that doesn't mean that other countries might be sneaking up on us as we go. In fact, and China definitely has the resources. I can definitely see it happen and within our lifetimes that there might be equal navies in the Pacific.
Yeah, that's certainly a possibility.
So anyway, the idea of railguns is fascinating to me, and that's that in my own designs of ships that I've come up with, they use almost exclusively railguns. Now, of course, railguns have a one key drawback. Of course, they use electricity, which is to generate the magnetism that then flings the projectile off. Now, if anyone knows anything about electromagnets, they use a ton of electricity. So you would almost be exclusively reliant upon nuclear power or some other fuel source that we may not know of that would be able to provide the electrical output to use a railgun. Now we'll discuss this in the ships of the week in a moment, but but neither of the ships that we have actually are nuclear power. So I'd be interested to see how that would actually work into it.
Yeah, there is one type of ship in the US fleet currently that might be able to develop enough power for this, and we'll talk about this during our Ship of the Week section.
All right. And just to mix things up a little bit, Will, would you prefer to go first this time for your?
Sure. So, my Ship of the Week, which I just mentioned, is the USS Zumwalt, which is a new destroyer that was recently commissioned into the US fleet and is generally considered to be the most advanced surface warship in the world. This ship actually has a long development history that is filled with some examples of where the defense acquisition process can go wrong. Originally, this was part of what was called the DD-21 program. And this actually goes back to the fact that the Iowa-class battleships were briefly brought back into service in the 1980s, but then retired again in the 1990s at the conclusion of the Cold War. The reason why the Iowas were brought back is partially because the Marines insisted that they needed to have naval surface fire support for them, which battleships are better at providing than anything else. And that's primarily shore bombardment. And the Iowas did do that to great effect during the Gulf War. When the Iowas were retired, though, the biggest gun in the fleet was the 5-inch gun on the destroyers and cruisers that we had. And that's really nothing next. That was the secondary armament of the Iowas. It's nothing compared to the main armament of the Iowas. So the Marines were concerned that with the retirement of the battleships, they wouldn't get the support that they needed. So, the Navy started the DD-21 program intended to produce a new ship capable of maintaining that naval fire support role. There were some issues with funding, and they ended up reorganizing it into the DDX program, and then that became the Zumwalt class destroyer program. Originally, they were planning to build 32 of these ships. That got cut down to 7, and then that got cut down to 3. And so each ship is astronomically expensive because the R&D budget has to be spread across only 3 ships. The other problem with this is they each carry 2 6-inch guns, which are highly advanced. However, they don't carry any ammo for those guns because the ammo program was canceled because each shell would be so expensive because there were only 3 ships that it was considered not worth it. So they carry 2 guns that they don't have any ammunition for, which is really crazy. But anyway, notwithstanding, there are 3 ships in the class, the USS Zumwalt, the USS Michael Mansour, and the USS Lyndon B. Johnson, which is about to be commissioned. And these are extremely advanced ships. They have stealth features. They have, and I'll talk a little bit about their power plant next, which is really interesting. So they have what's called an integrated electric power plant, and that's able to provide a huge amount of electrical power. I read on the internet that it was something like 7 times the amount of power generated by our next ship of the week that Wade's going to talk about, the Arleigh Burke class. And this is why they may be able to mount railguns in the future. This power plant is actually kind of an interesting throwback. It's essentially a turboelectric drive configuration. And we used turboelectric drive on what we call our standard type battleships in the late 1910s and 1920s. So the New Mexico class ships, the Tennessee class ships, and the Colorado class battleships had turboelectric drive. And that's where instead of having your propeller directly geared and connected to your turbine acts as a generator for electric motors, and then the electric motors run the actual engine or run the propellers. And that has some advantages because it's easier to immediately switch directions and things like that. It makes usually for a heavier system, but provides a huge amount of power. And it provides a lot of reserve electricity that you can then use for other things. Most famously, the aircraft carrier Lexington was able to run the entire city of Tacoma, Washington's power grid after their power plant failed. So anyway, the Zumwalt class ships have that capability, which is really interesting. Another kind of throwback feature is the sides of the hull are sloped inwards in what's called a tumble home configuration. That's primarily a radar measure, but they have not that type of design has not been seen on surface warships since the very early 1900s when French pre-dreadnoughts, Wade's favorite type of ship, had that type of arrangement. The French did that primarily for aesthetic reasons. They thought it made their ships look more intimidating, and it was called their quote-unquote fierce face design language. But there are more practical reasons for the Zumwalt class to have that design. So in some ways, they're a throwback. They're also huge ships. So the Zumwalt is actually about as long as the battleship USS Nevada was. So although it's technically classified as a destroyer, they are really, really big. They also have an interesting arrangement of their vertical launch system or VLS missile tubes. They're actually arranged around the perimeter of the ship as opposed to in a single block in the middle of the hull. And that's done to provide some additional survivability to the ship. They're actually kind of outside the main strength hull of the ship. And the idea is that any explosion will be directed outwards as opposed to into the ship. So they're really interesting vessels. I wish we had built more of them and that we had actual ammo for their advanced guns. But back to railguns, there is some discussion ongoing of mounting a railgun on the USS Lyndon B. Johnson, the third Zumwalt class destroyer, at some point in the future. And the reason for this is because the 32 megajoule railgun that the Navy has been prototyping needs about 25 megawatts of power just on its own to give it the power that it needs to fire its shells. And currently, the Zumwalt class is the only ship in the fleet, even interestingly, though it's not nuclear powered, but due to its turboelectric drive system, it does have enough reserve power to have one of these railguns on board. So that might be an interesting future replacement for these advanced guns that have no ammunition. And so I think right now, the Zumwalt class is really the only ship class we currently have with the chance to have a railgun installed on board. But the Navy is currently doing a new program, which I don't know much about, called the Large Future Surface Combatant Program. And that is kind of intended to long-term replace the Ticonderoga class guided missile cruisers, which are currently getting up there in terms of age. And this ship is going to have a completely new hull design. There's talk of incorporating, based on public sources, some technology from the Zumwalt class ships, and so there's a possibility that in the future this new class of ships may mount a railgun. It's worth noting that the railguns that they're currently talking about for both the Zumwalt class and the large future surface combatant are still a lot less powerful than the battleship-sized guns carried on the Iowas. The Iowa class ship had a muzzle kinetic energy of 360 megajoules when they fired a 16-inch shell. When they actually hit their target downrange, it was about 160 megajoules. And by comparison, the railgun that they're talking about at the moment has a capacity of 32 megajoules. So, still not up to the giants of the past, but it could be an interesting example of a resurgence of naval gunfire support, especially if they can get up to ranges of 200 miles. So, that could be pretty interesting in the future. It's possible that the battleship may make some sort of comeback. We don't know. That remains to be seen. But it's interesting to see what happens next.
Absolutely. And personally, in terms of aesthetics, the Zumwalts are up there with French dreadnoughts for me. Maybe that's why I didn't choose it in the first place. And also adding with the fact, well, I didn't know about the lack of ammunition that they had for their guns. That's absolutely ridiculous in my mind.
It's pretty silly. Yeah, they decided apparently each shell was going to cost $800,000, and so they canceled it.
Ouch. But I think I might have actually gotten alluded to that in my ship of the week, which is the Arleigh Burke class destroyers. Now, these are the previous ships in terms of technology for the US Navy. But these ships are, again, they're also pretty large. They are the size of a cruiser, I would say. But the Navy tends to classify anything that isn't an amphibious assault ship or an aircraft carrier or a assault carrier as a destroyer. It's just the way it seems to work right now. But anyway, these ships are ubiquitous. And when I say ubiquitous, I really mean it. 67 have been completed and 66 are active currently with one damage. I believe that's been in the news within the last year, if I remember correctly. The Navy also plans to add another 15 more at least to the fleet before even considering a replacement to the Arleigh Burkes. And with only three of the Zumwalts being produced, they are definitely not going to be a replacement for the Arleigh Burkes anytime soon. So, anyway, only five of those 15 that I mentioned are currently under construction, and the other 10 are still on the drawing board. Now, these 10, this gives even more room for improvement on these ships. However, that is not the inherent strength of believe that railguns might be mounted on the Arleigh Burke shines as an example of modifiable ship design. This ship has gone through multiple upgrades and every time has gotten better and better in terms of its capability and its range, its fire support. Every single time it's gotten better since its introduction in 1991. If I remember correctly, they're on what's called Flight 2A of the of their upgrades that they've done
I think
since
so.
the
That sounds right. Yeah.
anyway, and they serve as the backbone of the US non-aviation surface fleet. So these destroyers are extremely capable on their own. Now, they only mount one 5-inch gun, and when I mean one, we're not talking one turret that has barrels, a single turret and a single barrel. So, in terms of a experimental technology, which railguns are, this would actually make sense that you would mount that you could replace that single turret with another single turret of an experimental design, hopefully to minimize structural changes that would be done. As Will mentioned, the Zumwalt are using a system that is similar to a turboelectric power system. Now, the Arleigh Burke is different. They use what's called gas turbine technology. Now, gas turbines are similar, I suppose you could say, to steam turbines in that they use that it's still a turbine-esque technology, but I'd argue that it's almost more similar to a jet engine or a turboprop design, where you have a jet engine that is essentially driving a central that is connected directly to the propeller at the rear of the ship. Now, these gas turbines, of course, provide power for the rest of the ship. I believe there may also be diesel generators Harley Burke's use. Remember the power output of these engines. But my bet is that these engines could produce within the realm of that power output, but I'm not entirely sure. Will, do you have any ideas yourself?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
The gas turbines of the Arleigh Burkes, do you have any idea of the electrical power output of these engines?
I don't know exactly what the overall electrical power is, but I know that it's several times smaller than the Zumwalt. So the Arleigh Burkes currently don't have the capability to mount a railgun.
Right. Now, like I said, these ships have proven to be highly modifiable. There are 10 that are still under construction. So it is conceivable that the Navy could decide to re-engine these ships. Now, again, my scenario is probably a little less likely than the third Zumwalt destroyer, but also these ships have been proven, like I said, to be highly modifiable. So I do believe that there is a chance, and the Navy has already tried to experiment with these ships in the past. Now, these were so-called the Mark 45 guided munitions, and I believe that these might be related to the rounds that Will was talking about. These single 5-inch gun 5-inch shells, which were guided actually, they were reported to be able to be fired at up to 40 miles. Now, this is a traditional gunpowder and shell design, but still, 40 miles was crazy when I was doing my research on this. However, technical issues with the shell and probably cost overruns as well caused the cancellation of the project. Like I said earlier, I believe this laid the groundwork for the Navy being willing to experiment with the Arleigh Burkes as a class, especially because they don't appear to be going anywhere anytime soon. So I believe that the Arleigh Burkes might stand a chance, but again, the Zumwalt appears to be the prime candidate for the railgun. And I encourage you also to look up the footage of the railgun in action. Believe it or not, it's a lot more impressive than what you're probably thinking. You're probably thinking it's like a little Nerf gun firing, but it actually looks quite impressive when the Navy has been experimenting with these weapons.
It
Anyway,
does.
yes, Will?
I was going to say one thing that's kind of interesting about the Zumwalts too is that they have reverted back to the old numbering system. So when we started building guided missile Aegis destroyers like the Arleigh Burkes, they came up with a new numbering system for them. But for the three Zumwalt class ships, which are DDG 1000, 1001, and 1002, they actually reverted back to what they call the gun destroyer numbers, the last of which was the last Spruance class destroyer, which was DDG, I think 998. So that kind of shows the acknowledgement that the guns are considered the primary offensive power of the Zumwalts.
Yes. Now, the key thing, of course, correct me if I'm wrong on this, Will, but rail guns also have very little recoil to them, correct?
I think so. I'm not sure about that, but yeah.
Yes. And obviously, with old naval rifles, that was one of the real concerns about mounting them, that there was so much recoil that the ships had to be built to structurally sustain them. And I believe that there were some cases where ships actually bent themselves if they were mounted with too large of a weapon. And of course, there are accounts from the Bismarck that I know of that the ship actually would shift sideways in the water if it gave a full if it gave a full salvo, which is pretty
There's some
scary.
discussion of that being a urban legend, but we do know for sure that when the Rodney fired her guns against the Bismarck during the final battle, the recoil effect caused like rivets to pop out and like panels to fall off and all kinds of like structural damage. So yeah, the recoil effect was definitely a major problem.
Yes, and again, if we can actually get the teething problems out of rail guns, I truly believe that we could return to an era of big guns. Now, how often will they be used? That is left to your discretion to decide. But anyway, I can hear the water coming into the dry dock. We are out of time for today. I hope you learned something. I hope you will speculate on your own about this. And Will, have any final thoughts?
Nothing, just thanks for listening.
All right. We will talk to you all soon. Stay safe. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.